October 25th, 2005, item number 99. Today's guest is Heather Green from Business Week magazine.
Podcast411.com. Listen different.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rob, and this is the Podcast 411 Podcast. Before we get into the interview with Heather, a couple quick news and notes. First, anytime during the show you want to leave voice feedback, please call 206-666-HELP, that's 206-666-4357, or if you're at your computer, you can go ahead and send comments and feedback to rob at podcast411.com. Yesterday, I had a great customer service experience at the Bose store in Leawood, Kansas. Thank you, Tim, for everything you did. Swapping out my headphones a few weeks ago, my headphones broke and they swapped them out. No issues, no hassle. Incredible customer service experience. Bose gets it both technically and on the customer side. And interestingly enough, at the end when I told Tim I was going to mention it on my podcast, I didn't get the deer in the headlights look I'm used to. He actually listens to podcasts, so Tim, if you're listening, thanks for your help. If you go to podcast411.com and click on our directory of directories, we're now up to 76 podcasting directories. I've added a few new ones, some new niche ones. A nature podcast directory, which has to do with eco-friendly podcasts. A outdoor radio network, which has to do with hunting and fishing and things, outdoor hobbies. And a Chinese language directory. So again, go to podcast411.com and click on a directory of directories. If you have a podcast that fits in any of these categories, make sure you add them to those directories. Over on our forum boards, there is a link in the news section to an eBay auction for a ticket to the Podcast Expo. So if you're thinking about going, one of our listeners is auctioning that off. So please go over and check it out. You have until the 27th, Thursday the 27th, to bid on that. So hurry up and go over there. Again, that's the forum boards under the news section. Back on show number 98, I asked you to vote on what you would like to see for the 100th show. The voting was very heavily lopsided in favor of a listener interview. So we're going to go ahead and do that. My favorite comment, though, has to be, Rob, don't jump the shark. I will definitely heed your advice, and for show 100, we will be interviewing a listener, someone who's not doing a podcast and has no plans to do a podcast, but listens to podcasts very frequently. So come back for show 100 for that. Well, that's going to do it for the news and notes. We're going to go ahead now and get into our interview with Heather Green from Business Week magazine. Here we go. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You have been part of the podcasting community since October last year. Let me read a quote from the wise sage Heather. From October 25th, you wrote, this is October 25th, 2004, get ready for the next wave, podcasting.
I loved it. As soon as I was watching it, I was watching Doc Searles and what he was doing in terms of writing about it. And then I talked to Adam pretty early, and I wanted to write, you know, something to get something in the magazine as soon as possible, because I really just had a sense that this was pretty amazing. There were a lot of different things that were coming together. And so, yeah, I was glad to get something early in.
So now we got a little bit of your history out of the way. We'll get back into that a little bit more here in a second. I'll catch you up with the first question, and that is, what was your first computer?
I lived in Paris, and I was working for the International Herald Tribune, and we had these dedicated machines, and I think they were called ATAC.
Well, that's definitely a unique answer. We haven't had that one before.
I don't have one of those, like, Commodore 64 or the early Apple. I do remember a brilliant friend of mine in college having one of the early Apples, but that was as close as I got to them.
You went for your master's in Paris.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go for your undergrad?
So I went to the University of Virginia, and I also went, for the first 2 years of college, I went to a school in Paris as well. And then I went back to Paris, and I thought I was going to be a diplomat, and I studied there for 3 years, ended up living there for four, but then I decided to come back to the United States and try out being a reporter.
So did you enjoy Paris?
I love Paris, and I often wonder, you know, what a dope I was, and why would I ever, you know, come back? Because it was a great lifestyle. But in retrospect, I really have been lucky to be able to fall into the career and to cover the types of companies that I've been able to do as a result of coming back, because I've only ever written about the internet, and I've been a reporter for about 10 years, and that's just been an incredible opportunity for me.
Yeah. It's been an incredible 10 years to be a reporter on the internet, too.
I know, yeah, absolutely. I started at Bloomberg, and it was in 94, and they needed somebody to write about, they trained you on the general desk, and then they said, okay, so we have healthcare, or we have, you know, this thing online, America Online, Prodigy, you know, we think maybe we need somebody to cover that. And I was like, well, I'm not sure I want to cover healthcare, so I just did this other thing by default. It was amazing, because at that point, you know, that's when, you know, Netscape started coming up, and that we had the Java, you know, wars, and the browser wars, and I was just really lucky because I was the only one at Bloomberg covering it, so I could just talk to anybody. And it was a small community, so you could talk to, like, Mark Andreessen and all of those guys, and it was really just incredible.
Have you had the opportunity to talk to, like, the founders of Google before and after?
I did, yeah. And, you know, frankly, the first story I wrote about them online was wrong. I misunderstood how their technology worked, and so I had to go back and correct it.
Oops.
And I know. It was not a good thing. But, yeah, I did talk to them very early. And you could tell, and I think we all could tell, really as soon as I think they took some of the wraps off of what they were doing, that this was something pretty remarkable. And it was just heralded by how elegant it looked. And so I think most of us, you know, in the tech community, once we started getting a look at it, understood that this is pretty superior to what was out there right now at the time.
And $11 billion each later.
Cool.
Or however many.
Only I quit my job and invested, huh?
On the podcasting side, like we mentioned early on, you've been reporting on podcasting for a year, so you've been basically part of the podcasting community as it's grown up and evolved over the past year.
Rob, that's very kind of you to say.
Well, I think it's probably safe to say you've written, from mainstream media, you've probably written more articles on podcasting than anyone else. What has amazed you the most over the last year, or things that have most amazed you, if there's multiple?
Well, the main thing that's amazed me the most, honestly, how quickly it has taken off. As much as I thought it was an amazing and incredible innovation and really smart and had all the elements of, you know, ease of use and the grassroots ability for people to talk to each other about what they were doing, I've never seen anything become adopted as quickly as this has become. And equally, I've never seen, you know, big companies jumping in as quickly as they have, like their channel or Infinity or all of these other media companies. And so really just the rate of adoption from people who understand the power of this and who love the idea of what it unleashes in terms of people's voices on a grassroots level to the mass media jumping in has been just incredible for me. Do you think, I mean, what age group of people do you think are doing podcasting? Do you have a sense for that?
I still think the majority of podcasting comes down to, I mean, just looking around, it's still mostly male geeks in the age group of 20 to 40 range.
Right.
Is the majority. I mean, I remember looking at Derek when he did his, from Skepticality, when he did his demographics. It was 91% male between the ages of, I think it was like 21 and 45.
Oh, okay.
That said,
the audience is good, but the audience is different from that. That's interesting, right?
Yeah, well, that was the audience.
Oh, it was?
That was his audience. But you have to remember the subject matter in his show was skeptical thinking, basically a scientific version of Penn & Teller's BS.
Exactly.
It's a G-rated show, so I can't say the real name.
He has certainly found his audience.
But, you know,
love it.
You know, Mer Lafferty is trying to get more women into podcasting, and if you're a woman podcaster, you get bumped up on my list for interviews, because I would like to see the demographics change. I would like to see more women, because, yes, businesses are jumping in, but I think for this to really get mainstream, you have to have more mommy cast, you have to have more geek foo action grips. You need to have more women podcasting to bring in more women listeners.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because then they'll do, you know, shows about things that are, you know, more of interest to women. And I think it's going to happen. I think, you know, you kind of see what happened with blogging and how that was primarily men at the beginning. And I can't remember the most recent Pew survey I've seen, which I think is probably like 6 months old, still was showed that 43% of bloggers were women, which...
Which is a good number. When you have technology and you're above 40%, that's a good number.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I mean,
and I think it's going to happen. I do think you're going to see more women. In fact, I'll announce here on your show that I'm going to start podcasting. So,
is your podcast going to be kind of like your blog, and what are you going to be doing with your podcast?
Yeah, it's going to be an interview. Yeah. I think initially it's probably going to be interviews. I'm not going to be doing, you know, like DJing music.
You're not going to be going over to music.podshow.com to get some music?
Yeah. You imagine? And this is one of my favorite tunes.
Speaking of podcasts,
exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit on the podcasting side. What are some of the podcasts that, well, first off, what was the first podcast you listened to?
The first podcast I listened to was Adam Curry's show. That was back, like you say, back in October or September. I can't remember when. Because, frankly, you know, you read about it first, and then you sort of scratch your head, and then people, you know, then Doc Searls points you to Adam Curry. I think it was still called, it was a Daily Source Code, right? And,
yeah.
And so you download it, and I think maybe it was Dave Weiner and he were talking. I talked to both of them at that time about what they were doing. So that was the first one, yeah.
We talked about that yesterday when I was talking to a journalism class, and they said, you know, why do you think it took off and why it became so popular? And I go, well, I think part of it has to do with Adam Curry. I go, if it was just Dave Weiner promoting it, I don't think it would have gotten as popular as it did so fast, because I think editors and writers at these newspapers wouldn't have been as intrigued to talk to Dave Weiner, another geek from San Francisco or, you know, Silicon Valley, as they were the guy from MTV that had the good hair. He's a geek? No, I can't believe this. I got to find out more.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And then you're like, he's in the castle in the Netherlands? Of course you want to talk to him. You're right on. Although there was something very intriguing about the geek and the MTV star, you know, like the whole idea that there's this tandem that's come up with this. But you're right. Without the sort of like loopy idea of this MTV guy being in there promoting this, it wouldn't have been as intriguing.
I mean, that was my initial reaction when someone told me about it. They were like, have you heard this thing that Adam Curry's doing? And, you know, initially I heard about it, it was like middle of September last year, and I blew it off. I said, get out. I go, what could he possibly be doing? I remember him. Go away. And then a couple weeks later, I read another article. Was, I don't remember where it was. It was either Engadget or Macintouch or something. They were talking about it. And then I went and checked out his show. And, and as soon as I heard it, and then really when it clicked, it was like, oh, my God, this is a great thing.
Oh, yeah, no, and really it was. And those two promoted it so much. You know, Dave was always writing about it on his blog. And also that was at the time when, that's when the press was really getting excited about blogs and trying to figure out what it was. And so, you know, when you're reading Dave Weiner because you want to figure out what blogs are, and all of a sudden he's just, you know, hammering away at podcasting, you have to sort of pay attention. So there was that, and then just the very fact that, you know, Adam Curry was reaching out and talking to people and talking about other shows, and they were pulling together that directory. And so it kind of gave you a path, right, to go down. But it was really, really funny.
And then Apple jumps in June, and then things just went crazy. So
that was just insane. But there's still so much to, you know, be resolved, it sounds like, with Apple. I mean, at least for companies, you know, podcasts that actually might want to make money. I mean, and not everybody does, and I'm not assuming that they do. But if there are people who do, it sounds like it makes it hard for them to know, you know, really what their audience is, the way Apple is doing this.
When people say to me, how do you make money? And my first answer now is get an audience. I go, because the advertisers want to pay for an audience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Are there podcasts that you're listening to now on a regular basis?
Oh, sure. I ran into Brian Ibbett and with my reporting early on, too, over at Coverville, and I still really like listening to his stuff, and I also like Insomnia Radio. I still listen to Adam Curry's occasionally, and, you know, to be frank, I listen to a lot of the stuff from the different NPR stations, KCRW.
Five of the top 20 on iTunes are NPR stations.
It's incredible to me. And I occasionally listen to IT Conversations and to Twit. Mostly there's like three or four that I just listen to, and I'll dabble in others every once in a while. Oh, and I love Skepticality, but unfortunately...
Hopefully we'll have Derek back behind the mic soon.
Yeah.
One of the things was interesting in your October 25th article of last year, you mentioned that on September 28th there was like 14 hits for... podcast in Google. October 25th, it was 14,000. Well, January 1st, it was about 800,000. And today, there's about 60 million.
Yeah. Somebody should, we all owe Doc a real thank you for, you know, writing that down at the time, because it's great to be able to have those points in time. And I have to write down your 800,000 something, Rob.
It was $800,000.
Keep that one too.
It was like $797 okay, or something like that, right at January 1st.
Uh-huh.
And it was funny, when I was talking to the journalism class, and the professor, she said, you know, she's was one that had been following blogs, and she was surprised that, you know, a year plus ago, most people had not heard of blogs. And I said to her, I go, do you realize that if you do a search for on Google for blogs, it's actually more popular than sex? If you do a search right now on Google and you type in blog, you get 400 million hits. You get 200 million hits for sex.
Oh, God.
And I don't know about you, but
I'm worried about that. I'm sorry.
I can tell you this. I don't know about your parents, but my parents have never blogged. I know they did the other thing.
Yeah. That's horrible, too, because you think about it. Right, like people even ask you, now what's this Weberlog? Or they ask you all kinds of different things. So, you know, think about all the wrong things that are getting, you know, plugged in there, too. No, I'm sorry. I'm a little worried about that one, Rob.
Hey, I'm just telling it like I see it. I find that funny, though, but I use that as a good way to explain to people. I go, you know, podcasting came out of the blogging world, and to tell you how popular blogging is, it's actually more popular on the internet than sex. Because everyone thinks sex is the most popular.
Yeah, but you need to say obsessive to tell you how obsessive.
Yes, that's probably a better way to describe it. When you did the Coverville article, you had mentioned the word bored, people being bored with traditional radio. Do you think traditional radio stations understand how fed up listeners are with their content?
Oh, believe me, they do. Yeah, believe me. Yeah, no, I've talked to a lot of people from radio stations over the past year or so, and they get it loud and clear. And I think that what they did during the 90s in order to consolidate and, you know, to bring great value to their shareholders, as they put it, really ended up hurting them in the longer term in terms of kind of, you know, programming that they were doing. And I think they get that, and they're trying to figure out how to get around it now. I don't know how much leeway they have at this point because, unfortunately, I mean, they're still very profitable businesses, but they have the demands from Wall Street, and they're kind of in a tricky situation. I do think that, you know, ironically, they think that podcasting might be a way to help them explore the ways that they can be innovative.
You've got, like you said, Clear Channel and Infinity are getting in on the podcasting thing, but then you look at Cox Radio, and in the Wall Street Journal article on Monday, there was a great quote, or I would call it a pitiful quote in there, from the CEO of Cox Radio, and he goes, all podcasting is a way for the small minority of people to transfer recorded programming to their MP3 players.
I think you should probably listen to what that small minority is doing.
Well, I just, it was one of those things after coming through my MBA that I went, ooh, short that stock.
Yeah, listen, if you don't at the very least pay attention to what's going on, then I think that's problematic.
Yeah,
we have no idea what's going to happen with podcasting, whether, you know, it's going to be continue to be as exciting to people as it is now. But what it represents is something that they need to address, which is that people don't like hearing the same radio everywhere they go. And we're a very mobile culture, and we do hear everything, you know, that's in Atlanta or New York, in San Francisco, it's all the same, you know? And so we don't want that.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's the message they really should be getting.
And just walk down the street of New York and see how many little white earbuds you see as you walk down the street. Those people aren't tuned into a radio station.
No, and they're right when they say that audio listening and programming is so compelling to people, and that's a great opportunity, you know, that I don't think they've totally missed. They certainly have, you know, hurt themselves a great deal by how they did the programming that they do.
Two last questions here. One, where do you see podcasting and videocasting going over the next year or so?
I think videocasting is really going to have a lot of excitement around it, and I think it's going to draw a lot of people in and have a lot of innovation around it to try and, you know, come up with easier software to use and, you know, all these kinds of things. And there's a core group of people who are out there evangelizing it and, you know, from the video blogging group.
Steve Garfield being definitely one of those key people.
Right, and Jay Dedman.
And
Ryan Hudson. I mean, those guys are committed to it. And they, you know, really see a great opportunity not to make money, but to really unleash independent voices. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think podcasts I'll just throw it out there. I think that we're going to have a lot of people struggling to figure out, you know, the models and how to measure things if you want to make money on it. And we're going to have a lot more people just, you know, piling into it because there's going to be these tools from Odeo and from, you know, Podshow and from all these other people to make it easier and easier to get involved in it. I think it keeps growing. I think that there's probably a risk of a backlash and, you know, a little bit of a bubble bursting, people having to come to grips whether, you know, the commercial hopes that they have are viable. You know what I mean?
I think there's a lot of people that have gotten into it in recent months that saw it as a way to make money. I mean, I get emails from people that say, how do I make money at this? I'm thinking of doing a podcast. How do I make money? I'm like, start doing your podcast first, then worry about it. If you know, you're coming in just to make money, there's right. definitely going to be people that are disappointed.
Right. I kind of feel like it's more the way blogging is, where you have just a lot of people doing it because they love it, and then, you know, a few people being able to make money. But that, I'm not, you know, and I think people are motivated by other things.
So I hope most people, I hope they come into it because they're not motivated about money. You know, I like to say it's a hobby, and you don't fly model airplanes or paint little Civil War soldiers to make money.
Yeah, right, exactly,
You know, you've had a really nice perspective reporting on this for the last year, so you've really got to see it grow, and now you're starting to do a podcast. So if someone who's been waiting to do a podcast or thinking of doing a podcast, what advice would you like to offer to them today?
I think you should play around with it, right? I mean, that's the idea, to have fun with it and see if there's something that you want to express through it. I think that's what's great about a lot of these different things out there right now, that you can express different parts of your personality. So that, I think, would be, you know, the most important thing. Find something you're passionate about talking about, right? And take the opportunity to do it.
What's the name of your podcast going to be, and where can we locate it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know if it's going to have a name just yet. It's going to be attached, I think, to Steve Baker's series for the meantime, until we figure out, you know, what to do with it longer term.
Heather, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Rob, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, folks, that concludes our interview with Heather Green from Business Week magazine. Thank you again, Heather, so much for coming on the show. In the future, when Heather's podcast is available, I will be mentioning it on the show. I will have links to her podcast, and of course, I will be subscribing to her podcast. Well, at the end of today's show, we'll be playing two promos. First is Beauty Dish, True Underground Adventures of an Avon Lady. So please stick around for that. And following that promo, I'll be playing the correct promo for the RETC Tech Pod podcast from Fordham University. I inadvertently played the wrong one last time. Sorry about that, Kathy. So we're going to make right and play the correct one this time. That's going to do it for us for item number 99. Come back on Saturday, October 29th for item 100. As always, this is your host, Rob, from Podcast 411, reminding you to listen different.
Ever wonder what your local Avon lady might be up to? Listen to Beauty Dish Radio and find out what Avon lady Bertie Jaworski does. You'll be surprised.
Live from the Bronx, Fordham University's RETC's Tech Pod, a podcast for teachers, provides lively conversations about technology with leading educators. This is a podcast for teachers and learners of all ages. EdTech expert and author Mark Gura and RETC director Dr. Kathy King bring EdTech updates, tips, curriculum ideas, news, views, and research you can use on technology and education. From software applications to intimate conversations with notable and experienced educators, EdTechies, and authors, this is not your typical podcast. TechPod, Podcast for Teachers, is published by Fordham University's Regional Educational Technology Center in the Bronx, New York City. Visit us at www.podcastforteachers.org. Live from the Bronx, providing professional development on demand and EdTech you can use today and tomorrow.